to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, May 7th, 2015. It's a little after 2:30 UTC as we're recording this. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here with us again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello. Hello, hello, hello. So I was like over here, and as I'm talking to Sam, there I scrolled through one of the websites that I look for news.
Yeah.
And Mini, you know, Mini Me from the Austin Powers movies, you know,
yeah, what I'm talking about? Yeah.
He took a gun and put a bullet through an Apple Watch.
Okay.
Okay.
Fine.
For whatever reason, he decided to put an Apple Watch, take out a Glock, I think it was a Glock, and just put a bullet through it. I have no idea why. Doesn't really explain why.
Well,
but he just decided
that's
to...
That's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as it wasn't on anybody's wrist while he's doing
no,
it, I guess...
No, 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 no. He just set up as a target at a distance, and he just went, just fucked, pulled out a gun, just put a bullet right through it.
I guess he didn't like his watch?
Does
he have tattoos? Because there was that whole tattoo thing that came out this week with the Apple Watches.
I don't think so. No, he doesn't have a tattoo in the
For anyone who hadn't seen it, if you've got a tattoo on your wrist where the watch goes, the watch has trouble figuring out your heartbeat, which is one of the features it's supposed to have.
You know, I did have a friend of mine who you actually met at Purdue. I don't know if you recall. She had a very big tattoo there. Which, by the way, the way that she used to, like, cover it up because she got it, and it was, like, one of those times where you get, like, really, like, she got, like, really, let's just say, too liquored up.
And woke up with a tattoo.
And wound up with this tattoo of an eight ball on her wrist. Okay?
Okay.
Not exactly, you know, really,
and she
like,
wore a right? watch over it.
Oh, she wore this massive watch. Okay, all right. Because, you know, she had been like, I mean, she wanted to get rid of it, which I know I'm 99% sure. I think she told me she did get rid of it. Okay, all right.
Uh-huh.
By now. But yeah, she decided to wear just this massive watch over it. And the funniest thing is that I think she did this for a while to cover up from her dad. And one day, you know, it's like her dad, she's like adjusting the watch, and her father goes, do you think I'm that stupid? I haven't noticed an idiotic tattoo on your wrist. And she's like, oh, you did? Anyway.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I have yet, by the way, to see one of these in person in the wild.
I have not seen one in person. Like, I told Sam the other day, I saw... So
I'm expecting
Google Glass
it like any time now because, like, you know,
I
live in Seattle. There's all kinds of techie type folks around here where I work elsewhere. I'm actually surprised I haven't seen one.
I can't believe I beat you to seeing somebody with Google Glass, though. I'm stunned.
Yeah. Well, it took a while, didn't it?
It did take a while. Yes.
But, you know, however, there I have at least one Facebook friend who apparently has one of these because they posted on Facebook about their Apple Watch.
And any, you know, any
the only post I saw was I got my watch. So I don't have a verdict.
Okay. Well,
it's our common friend, initials MA, but anyway.
Okay.
So we do have a real show. There are a bunch of election 2016 developments this week. We've got three new candidates officially throwing their hats into the ring.
They got a lot of hats. We got hats.
We got a lot.
One of my favorite people.
Yeah, we'll undoubtedly mention your favorite person again. Yep. We also had Clinton say some things on immigration that were a lot bolder than some people expected, and sort of throwing a marker into the ring as well. And so we'll talk about all that kind of election stuff. The Tesla announced this new like house battery thing.
Understand that.
Yeah. We'll talk about that, and we'll try to perhaps educate Yvonne a little bit. I don't know. Not like I'm running out to order one, but, we have a follow up on the, Israeli election, because, Bibi finally got his coalition together, and it was, a lot harder than people thought it was going to be.
Right at the wire, at the wire.
I don't know if we'll get a whole segment out of that or not, but, we'll talk about those things, and then we'll have a lightning round. Okay. That was interesting. My son, Alex, just ran into the room, licked my knuckles, and then ran out again.
Okay. Well.
And on that note.
Definitely.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll start out with the election stuff, and then we'll go from there. Or I don't know. Maybe we'll scramble it up a little bit. Anyway, we'll be back after this. Okay, we're back. So you want to start with this election stuff, or should we scramble and do one of the other things first?
Let's scramble and do one of the other things. I don't know. Let's go with the new candidates.
New candidates. So we are doing the election stuff first.
Well, I thought you meant the BB election stuff for a second.
Oh, well, you know. Anyway. Well,
let's go with the election stuff. Let's go with the election. It's not tomorrow. The election's in a year and a half. Now we got candidates.
Well, yeah, the one that's tomorrow is the British election.
Right.
But, you know, honestly, we might talk about that in the lightning round for a second, but I haven't been following it super closely. We'll talk about it after we know the results of the election.
I know there are issues, but I mean, you know.
Yeah, anyway. Exactly. By the time people listen to this show, the British elections will probably be over unless I do this really fast and get out of it.
And it's going to become, you know, Parliament will be dissolved, Prime Minister will be fired, and the Queen will be in command again.
Yeah, I saw one tweet about, like, a headline of, like, you know, the Queen says, screw this shit, and I'm taking over,
and that's it. We're done.
Yeah.
Fuck this. We're out.
Anyway, let's talk about our election, our 2016 election. We have three, you know, and like I said at one point a few weeks ago, look, if you look at the official FEC who's signed up to be a candidate, there are hundreds of them. But of ones that anybody's going to pay any attention whatsoever, there were three new ones this week. Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina, and Mike Huckabee.
Okay.
So let's start. I know you did a mini rant about Carly Fiorina last week. I'll let you do another one. Tell me your thoughts on Carly Fiorina throwing her, saying she's going to run for president.
Okay, my thoughts. Look.
Aside from how much you hate her.
Yes. Okay. All right. The woman is evil incarnate, but from my perspective, okay, she is a despicable human being. Who, if you get a chance to like really, you know, push her, do something to her. I mean, you know, I would encourage anybody to do anything like that. I didn't say kill. Didn't say that.
Good clarification there. Good
clarification. Yes. But
you're not encouraging, you know, any illegal activity.
And you can not stick out your foot. She's walking by and you can stick out your foot so she trip over in front of you, I would certainly encourage you to do that. Okay. look, the woman is incompetent.
Okay. So
she's an idiot. Okay.
Let's back out from
and
that.
She's running for president. And the only reason maybe to aggrandize her ego, because her shot at winning is like zero.
Doesn't she have a book coming out? Is this all about her book and selling maybe more copies of her book?
I did hear that she was going to come out with another book. Maybe it's about another fucking book. Maybe she could pocket another few million bucks.
Do we know anything about her actual policy views?
She is running as a Republican, as far as I can tell.
Well, yes, she is running as a Republican, but I mean, beyond that, I mean, honestly, because my impression of her has been mostly driven by you, so I haven't dug into that very much.
Listen, her policy views, I'm sure, move like with the tides. Whatever the hell will get her more attention, you know? I mean, seriously. I don't think she stands for anything. I don't think this. I think this is all an entire exercise of the fact that since she's been fired 10 years from HP. And I don't know if you've noticed, but nobody's been banging the door at hiring her as a CEO anywhere for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I think that she wants some attention, and so therefore she's doing this. That's my thought. You know?
Okay. So let's move on. Mike Huckabee.
Well, hey, but that's another guy with no shot. I mean, really? He can't win a general election with his views. You know this. And he's not going to...
He probably can't win the nomination.
Either. Yeah.
I mean, the one thing is, I mean, basically, his main differentiator, he's a religious conservative. He comes from that background. He is kind of, I want to say he's a throwback. Like, he would look very much at home in the Republican, in the, like, moral majority part of the Republican Party in the 1980s.
Yeah.
You know, and that's sort of where he is. I mean, and you look at him, I mean, even compared to some of the other Republican candidates, you know, who you say, okay, maybe they're, you know, positioned such and such versus the general public, but, you know, in some ways they're modern and forward looking and blah, blah, blah. Huckabee seems to look completely towards the past.
Yes. You know? I mean, that is just he's like a modern version of Pat Buchanan is what I feel like.
And very different temperamentally.
No, temperamentally, but I'm talking policy-wise.
Huh. Is that true?
I'm not sure. I don't know. It's just my impression. But I may be wrong, but, you know, but he's socially conservative in that way. He seems to pound the same crap, or at least pander to the same people. You know?
Now, the one thing that's interesting, like, if you compare him to, like, a Santorum, who is also known as a religious conservative, although in a slightly different way, because he's Catholic, you know, Huckabee does have this, you know, he seems like a nice guy kind of thing going for
him. Right. Santorum comes off as an asshole.
Right. But when you see, like, Huckabee talk, like, I remember in the last election cycle or whenever he ran ago, you know, watching him on something on C-SPAN where he was in a small group setting, talking to college students, answering questions, things like that. And he actually seemed like, oh, okay. I may disagree with him on X, Y, or Z, but he's a nice guy. He's thought about it. He's not like, you know, this rabid, person who's pounding the table. And you feel like you could have a reasonable conversation about him about something, even if you disagreed. And so I was like, okay, he's not that bad. I mean, even if I disagree with him on all kinds of stuff, he's not like a horrible human being. But, you know, but he is sort of enough off the beaten path that he'd certainly have a really, really tough time in a general election, I think. But even within the Republican circles, I think there's, you know, he doesn't cater to the other parts of the Republican Party. You know, there's the business friendly Republicans, there's the libertarian type Republicans. You know, he's not appealing to those other guys. So he's not a candidate that, you know, the Republican coalition as a whole is going to somehow come together on.
And that's exactly why I said that he's just, you know, he's unelectable too, because precisely that. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just not going to happen.
Now, the thing with all of these candidates, and people are joking about how, you know, for the debates, they should just go like, you know, Hollywood Squares style. And, you know, we're dating ourselves. we're dating ourselves by that reference.
I like that.
But, like, you know,
that's not a bad idea.
But at this point, instead of like a 3x3 grid, you're going to need a 5x5 grid for all of the candidates in the little stack. But you know, but the thing is that there at this point, there are so many Republicans running. That all of these candidates who are, say, outside of the top four or five that, you know, everybody talks about as actually having, you know, likelihood of getting a significant number of the delegates. And we're talking Bush, we're talking Paul, we're talking Walker, maybe Cruz, maybe Rubio. That's probably the core five that people talk the most about as, you know, having, you know, being quote unquote the serious ones.
Sure.
But aside from those, all of the rest of these guys, there's two possible reasons for going through this exercise. Three, I guess. One is they're really running for VP or for another position in the administration. So, like, for instance, in Carly Fiorina's case, we've talked about, you know, maybe she's looking to be picked as VP, or maybe if not VP, maybe she's looking for a cabinet job, something like that.
I think she's just looking for doing it for attention.
Well, and so that's the other thing is, like, what if you've got a book or you've got something to promote?
Right.
People talked about Huckabee from last time around. You know, he didn't get the nomination, obviously, but he ended the election season with a nice job on Fox News that lasted the last few years.
What about Sarah Palin, for example? I mean, look at her. I mean, what the hell? She's like parlayed that into millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, and so you got that. You got the really, really jonesing for a part of the administration. You've got the just looking for attention. And then you've got the third case, which is, I know I'm not going to win, but maybe I can get my issues talked about.
Yep.
And
it's like the Ralph Nader nomination.
The Ralph Naders or you know, we talked about on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders. You know,
right.
Bernie Sanders doesn't think he's going to win the Democratic nomination, but he hopes that
he wants people to talk
about the things that he cares about.
Makes sense.
You know, and you know, I think, you know, cynically, you know, last time around, Huckabee got that nice Fox job, but, you know, he could have kept the nice Fox job. He had to quit the Fox job to do this. I think he's probably in the issues category at this point, where he has a certain point of view that he wants to make sure gets talked about and represented in the process. And I think that's what he's about.
No, I hear you.
And so our third one is Ben Carson.
Not Johnny Carson.
And I'll be honest. Yeah, I don't know all that much about him. Yeah, I know I'm looking at his Wikipedia page and just as reference, and I've heard some of this stuff before, of course. You know, he's a doctor. He's, of course, African-American, which is brings a unique perspective on the Republican Party. And he's written some books.
He's another he's token on the radio. Black person in the frickin' Republican Party. I mean, seriously. I mean, you know, I mean, this whole thing with, like, I mean, come on. There was these statistics the last time out of how many delegates were African-American or whatever. I mean, it was such a tiny percentage. I mean, come on.
I definitely know the point you're going for. But at the same time, he does have, you know, he has been popular on the conservative side of the fence over the last few years and has been gaining in popularity. Now, he's never held public office. That's not his route. So he's, you know, he's kind of like, what are some equivalents lately that have run for office that,
Alan West.
Well, okay. But he ended up actually winning something, but yeah.
But then lost it like 2 years, but.
But, like,
and now he's on Fox.
I mean, going back a few years, we can talk about Jesse Jackson or Ross Perot or, I'm trying to come up with an example that isn't 30 years old. But we have these candidates all the time who actually have never had elective experience, but for whatever think that, you know, hey, I'm going to run and I can get out there and, you know, and realistically, very few of them have a shot, because one of the things the American public seems to somewhat demand is, look, if you're running for president to be taken seriously, you need to have held high office before. Most of the time, that means you've been a governor, a senator, or maybe a vice president. Every once in a long while, there's someone in from the House. but it's very, it's
but
been
those are the jobs.
And a Secretary of State has done it a couple times too, but it's been a very, very long time since we've had somebody that did not do any of those. I guess actually the general is the other thing. We haven't done that since Eisenhower, but
the general.
Yeah, I mean, but those kinds of things. So we don't generally go for the person who's just, all he's ever done has been a successful businessman. You know, those folks haven't won. That's not to say they can't in the future, but historically, the American public seems to want somebody who's actually done something in government before at a high level.
I know.
So I think Ben Carson, I don't have a good sense. Is he one of the issue guys or is he one of the promote himself guys?
I think he's one of the issue guys. I think.
I'm not sure. I'm on the fence on that because, I mean, he's got a lot of, you know, sort of media stuff going on that, yeah, this will certainly promote. And I don't know.
Maybe we should run for the Republican nomination now that you're talking about this.
Yes, you'd be a very good Republican, Yvonne.
I'd make a great Republican.
Anyway, so those are our three new candidates this week.
You think if I said fuck a lot in the debates that wouldn't go over well?
Speaking of debates, the Democratic Party did announce that the Democratic National Committee announced there will be 8 debates on the Democratic side of the aisle.
8
now,
debates.
Who's going to be talking to Hillary is an open question. Now, you know, and Hillary tweeted shortly after, I welcome the debate. We'll be talking about meaningful things while the Republicans are blah, blah, blah. You know,
talking to herself.
Well, here's the thing. Like, what the articles I saw on this mentioned that part of what had been agreed were the criteria for inclusion in the debates. But I did not see anybody specify exactly what those criteria were. I don't know if I just missed this and you or any of our listeners know, please drop us a line and tell me what those criteria were, because I didn't see that. And so what I'm thinking is basically Hillary, the Democratic National Committee, whether it be explicitly or implicitly coordinated in some way with the Clinton folks to define these criteria in a way that was acceptable to Hillary. And, you know, I tweeted that I think the calculus here basically is like, if we got a bunch of candidates that are polling at 1-3%, and then we got Hillary polling at 60%, it would be stupid for Hillary Clinton to get on a stage with them. You know, because all it does is elevate them. It's all downside for her. There's no real upside for her.
But you have no Democratic debates.
But if, on the other hand, some of these candidates, if Hillary's polling at 54% and say Bernie Sanders is polling at 15%, then if she said, I'm not participating in any debates, she looks arrogant, she looks above it all, she looks like she feels entitled to it,
right?
And it may actually hurt her more to not have the debate, and so that in that case she would have a debate. So I'm guessing the inclusion standards for these debates are something along the lines of that, you know, candidates have to be polling above 10% in one of the early primary states, something along those lines, because in those scenarios it would actually pay Hillary to go ahead and get on that stage with those people, because it makes her look magnanimous, and, you know, they don't have a shot, but, you know, I'm going to talk to them anyway. And it makes it the Democratic Party look inclusive, and it shuts down the criticism of, you know, she's just walking away with it. But I think
about Al Gore? Can you get Al Gore?
No, people have mentioned him, by the way, but, yeah, but
I'm saying,
opponents are down in the single digits, I don't think she's going to bother with the debates. I think some of them, you have to have somebody up at 10% plus to make it worth her while.
I mean, come on, look, you need some attention to the candidates. Okay, all right. How the hell could she go through an entire freaking thing without any debates whatsoever? I mean, the only reason.
And by the way, some of these guys are above 10% right now. If you put in Biden, if you put in Sanders, if you put in these guys, She's got 60%. She's got a commanding majority, but some of them.
You do realize Gore is only 67. Jesus, yeah. He's 67 now? So that means
when... Yvonne, Gore's not going to happen. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to tell you.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I'd rather vote for Gore than I would have for fucking Hillary right now. If you ask me.
Well, you know, actually, like, one thing that's come up a couple times is, you know, if Hillary was to implode, let's say, you know, it's not necessarily any of these guys we've been talking about that would jump in. It's like, you know, Sanders isn't suddenly going to get the nomination.
No.
You might get people, and like even you would probably get Biden deciding to jump in if Hillary imploded, but you might get Kerry too. You know,
there you go, Kerry. There you go.
You know, you might get several. You might get Warren, who said no so far. But if Hillary was out because she imploded, maybe she would reconsider. Maybe you would get Al Gore. I don't think Al Gore's thinking about that right now. But, you know, if we had a Hillary imploding scenario,
there are a lot of people
who would think about it who aren't thinking about it right now.
I voted for Gore in 2000. And if we had had Gore as a president, God, Lord only knows how the fuck.
Yvonne, you need to come clean. We're talking about 2000 here. We're talking about you living in Florida. You know you got confused by the butterfly ballot.
I voted for Pat Buchanan by mistake. I lived in Broward County, and I voted for Gore, and I know I voted for Gore.
I'm pretty sure you screwed up and voted for Pat Buchanan.
I did not vote for Buchanan. I voted for the right guy. I didn't wind up with this moron then for 8 years. Jesus Christ, sent us to war, almost bankrupted the whole country, for God's sakes. You know, well, the only testament that I can say about that whole thing is that we survived the whole damn thing. We're still here.
So the other Hillary Clinton news this week, Hillary Clinton came out and gave a little speech on immigration where she went a lot farther than anybody expected her to. She basically said she supported everything that Obama has done on immigration with his executive actions, and she would go beyond them and do even more.
Wow. So here's the last poll that I found.
Just real quick. The reason that's important, and a lot of people have actually put it out as.
What has she got to lose about saying that right now to her?
She's got nothing to do. Nothing to lose on her side. But people have put it as she's baiting the Republicans into getting into this debate and becoming more and more vigorously about this, so that they will alienate Hispanic voters.
It's genius. Yes, you need to do this now. I mean, they're throwing every stick and stone that they can right now at her, right? I mean, they're doing it already. I mean, every Republicans. Of course you want to do this right now. Hell yes. I would bait them now.
The idea is that by attacking her, the Republicans have to get down and dirty and be very explicit about exactly what they're recommending or not recommending on the immigration issue. And Clinton is basically betting that by doing this, they're going to piss off all the remaining Hispanics who were going to vote Republican and drive them to the Democrats.
So let me give you, you know, for example, why to Hillary right now, unless something really seriously changes by the end of the year, this is, you know, what the hell, right? I'm looking at one Iowa Democratic Presidential Caucus, current poll, okay? The numbers. Clinton, 57%. Warren, who's not even running, 15%. Biden, not even running, 6%. Sanders, 2%. Webb, 1%. O'Malley, 2%. I don't even know who the hell Webb and O'Malley are.
I just want to say, I know I tweeted about this. O'Malley was the bane of my existence, and I am so upset at O'Malley, and it's my own damn fault. Basically, my whole election site that I do tracking all the polling, I did not bother to make it apostrophe safe. So when he had the first state level poll for O'Malley, and it basically broke my whole damn site. because he has an apostrophe in his name. And so I had to spend...
Fucking misspell his name. Fuck that.
Well, you know, look, I wanted to get it right. I mean, one possibility was just leave out the apostrophe. I thought about it. I rejected it. I then spent about 12 solid hours fixing my whole damn site so that it would work right with O'Malley as a candidate, even in the edge case that Obama... that O'Malley actually becomes a front runner. Like,
good Lord, he's got like 2%. I mean, give me a fucking break.
Anyway, like, so,
I mean, my point is that her current spread is like 42 points, and it's 42 points over a candidate who's that is declared running. Who's not running.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, what the hell? So, I don't know. I mean, yeah, she could do whatever the hell she wants from this end right now. I mean, unless, I don't know, some, like, lesbian sex tapes come out. I mean, who knows? You know what? Who knows? That may improve their polling numbers as far as we know.
Yeah, and you mentioned Iowa polls. Nationally, it's very similar. She's at 62, Warren's around 13, Biden's around 10.
I'm saying Iowa because, I mean...
I know, it's one of the first, yeah, et cetera. Yeah. Sanders is around 6, O'Malley's around 2, and then you got Webb and Chafee. And, you know, look, she is so dominant right now. Something really, really dramatic would have to happen to change that. And hey, dramatic things happen all the time. We can't exclude that as a possibility, but you can't plan on it either. Like anybody, you know, if you're betting on this right now, you bet on Hillary being the nominee and walking away with it. You know,
look, I know this is, you know,
and what are the chances of something dramatic that destroy your candidacy? They're not zero. It's not like 1%. It's probably not zero. Probably 15-20% chance.
It has happened before. I mean, who the heck was it? Who was the guy who was kept goading like the reporters to follow him and then found
Gary Hart.
Gary Hart. It was 30 years ago. Oh, yeah. Follow me. You'll never find anything. And he was like banging some, you know, whatever. You know, we had I remember that I was years ago in Argentina and it was one of the front runners in the election. Somehow they found obviously somebody like did this on purpose. They filmed a video of him banging a hooker who obviously was not his wife, who was shoving a dildo up his ass, and they had this video in the news.
Okay, that's right? Lovely, Yvonne.
Well, let's just say his candidacy took a dive after that. But you're like, really? I mean, I was like, you know, you think our politics are vicious. I was like, shit, really? Damn.
Well, look, and that's why, like, you know, not that I expect to see that from Hillary Clinton, but, you know, you got to give it like a 20-30% chance that something unexpected will explode and she'll go down because of it.
What if she has a major health issue? She's not young.
It could be a health issue. You could have something like, you know, even the scandals we're already talking about like what the Clinton Foundation is doing with money and stuff. Maybe some of that'll stick at some point.
Right.
You know, so far, no. But, you know, you never know what could be dug up tomorrow.
Right. Anyway,
let's take a break. We got two more topics in a lightning round to go. We will be back after this talking about Tesla. Back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
And we're back. Yvonne, during the break, noted that I had not set a timer, and so we went 26 minutes on that segment instead of 15.
Right.
So, oh, well.
Well, I was like waiting for the timer, and I'm like, wow, I mean, we keep going and we haven't run out of time. I mean, what the hell? So I just asked him, hey, I didn't hear a timer. What the hell? Oh, yeah, I didn't set it. Well, anyway. All
right. So now I've got a timer set for 10 minutes on this segment.
So we
to
can
make
only
up
go
for lost time. So Tesla announced a big battery for your house.
But, okay. Are you going to buy one?
No.
Okay. How much do they cost?
Like $3,500.
It's not that bad, actually.
No, it's not that bad. They're initially being marketed as, for places that have relatively frequent power outages, you get one of these instead of getting a gas-powered generator or something like that, and they can store up the power and then supply it back for your house when needed. But the potential they're being marketed on is that you'll be able to hook these up to solar panels and basically charge them with solar power and run your house off them and be free of the electric grid. And maybe not immediately on the first iteration, but that's where they're aiming. That's where they want to go with
this
technology.
Talking about these issues regarding, 10 kilowatt hour, $3,500, 7 kilowatt hour, $3,000. It's not bad. I mean, that is, to be honest, that's pretty damn cheap.
Well, exactly. And that's where they're being disruptive here, is these things aren't that big. I mean, they're not small either. But
they're not that big.
They're not that big. They're relatively cheap. They're cheap.
I mean, this is something you can put in a garage relatively easily. Not a problem.
Right.
At a price point that's really good.
I mean, and a lot of people were commenting on these that this is cheap enough that they're not even going to bother doing the ROI calculation. They just want one.
Yeah, I mean, there's no point. It's a $3,500. I mean, look, I'll give you a you went to our house in Puerto Rico. We had a generator. I don't know if you remember. I mean, it's a long time ago.
Yeah.
We had a big Caterpillar generator, 30 kilowatt generator. Dude, that thing cost back then, this is like 20 years ago, it had to be $15,000-$20,000, okay, for 30 kilos. I mean, now, and we're talking to run, you know, we would run 6-7 days, okay, on the fuel we had. Now, when you're talking $3,500, you know, you're talking, I mean, this is this is pretty damn good.
I haven't bothered to do the calculation or research here with the kilowatt hours it advertises. How long would this thing run a normal home if it was only running off the battery?
Well, showing over here, for example, like say a refrigerator is 4.8 kilowatts, a washer 2.3 kilowatts in one day. That's if you use them. So say, for example, you have a power outage. You're not going to be washing and drying clothes. Hmm. Okay. All right.
I'm wondering less about the power.
Kilowatts, your laptop would do 0.05. Your lights would be about 0.1 kilowatt per room, and your flat screen would be about 0.1. So you could probably run day, you know, you stretch it day and a half power. That's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, and so my question on this is not so much the, okay, I understand the initial market is replace generators for short-term power outages. What I want to know is how close are we to realistically being able to hook this thing up to solar panels and not get a damn thing from the grid?
I think that we're there, man. I mean, seriously, I said this like last year. I think we're there. I think that most of the reasons why, like right now, in some instances, we're not doing it. Look, like, for example, there's obstacles from like the utility companies and from other people and just getting this done. But I got to tell you, like, the price of the panels is coming down. We're almost there, man. We could just, you know, this is what I said, that in 20 years from now, the utility companies are scared shitless because they think that they're going to be out of business in 20 years. And they may be right because they're not making shit like this. Okay? They're not thinking about this. They're not thinking about installing solar panels in houses. They're not thinking about
whatever. Is it just that they're not thinking about it, or are there actually regulatory obstacles where they're not allowed to?
No, they're not thinking about it. They're just not doing it. They're not doing the innovation, period. They are just going out there just blocking. They're actively trying to block more technology than they are actually actively trying to do this stuff.
And their strategy certainly has been to throw up regulatory obstacles to people going off grid.
Absolutely.
The latest efforts in a number of states have been basically to say that, you know, hey, you're required to be on the grid and you're required to pay a certain minimum to us, even if you don't use any electricity from us at all.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, over here, for example, one of the models that's been financially successful is you've had companies say they would come to a place like where I live, right in a condo. They would go and they would set up the solar panels on their own dime, and then they would sell the power to us. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And in Florida, by law, because the utility companies pushed to pass a law, that's prohibited. You can't do it in the state of Florida.
You can't set up your own solar power panels
somebody,
and sell the
no,
power.
Somebody can't, a third-party company can't set up solar power panels here and sell the power to me.
Right.
By law, it's prohibited.
Because the utility has a monopoly on electricity distribution,
correct,
presumably. Yeah.
Correct.
See, these are the kinds of regulations that I think, legacy utility companies are going to fight like hell to have as many of these kind of obstacles in place as possible, but they're going to be temporary because at some point in the near future, and you said 20 years, it might even be sooner than that.
It might
even
be sooner.
Where, you know, the economics are just going to be so in favor of doing some kind of combination of, alternative power sources, local alternative power sources, whether it be solar or water or something, plus batteries. You know, and probably solar is probably the biggest contender right now, unless you happen to live next to a river or something. The economics are going to shift so dramatically that, you know, people are going to be clamoring for this. And, you know, at a certain point, the overwhelming majority of people saying, why the hell are you stopping me from having this? That'll make everything so much cheaper. Will overwhelm the utilities. I mean, it'll take a while because the utilities have a lot of money right now to throw around and lobby and such.
And influence.
But that will change.
Yep. No, I agree. So, I mean, that's what I'm seeing right now. I think this is, I mean, you get some people like this, like Elon Musk pushing this technology ahead. It certainly has an impact. I mean, look at the mind share that he's gotten just with his cars in terms of electric. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that you may be right. My 20 years may be too long.
Yeah. And I don't know. I welcome this change. You know, you've mentioned before you have a say in your condo board. Are you interested for your condo to get, like, yeah, obviously one wouldn't power a condo.
Well, the thing is that I need the solar panels first, which has been the obstacle. I mean, I was looking into this thing about getting like a third party company to install the panels and sell us the power, but then I found out that it's illegal in the state of Florida to do that. Then it takes us to come up with the money, and like right now, it's a thing that we've got other issues. Like right now, that I need to invest money in that I can't.
But
you
not,
know, put
not,
such
not
a big
useful,
capital
just,
investment.
Not useful just for power outages, though.
No, I mean, I'm talking in general. Just I'm talking just in general. In order to just get power, you know, all the time, I want to get off the grid.
I mean, I know you want that, but like this to you would not be interesting, not as a grid replacement, but just as a replacement for a backup generator. You wouldn't go for this right now.
Not right now. No, I don't have that.
Would it be different if you were in a single family home? Would you consider it?
Yes, I would consider it, but in conjunction with putting in solar panels, which I could more easily put in the single family home than in the condo. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Well, the thing is that you got to have the solar panels to make this thing.
The other interesting thing is to mention, and we're just about out of time here, is Elon Musk and Tesla, just like they did with the technology for the batteries in the cars, for these batteries have also put all the relevant patents into the public domain and said, anybody who wants to commercialize this, go for it.
That's true. They did.
And that also changes the dynamics quite a bit, because it means that it's not just Tesla going after this. If there's another company that wants to be aggressive about this kind of technology, they can go innovate on this too.
Yes, they can. So,
and our time is up. Let's take another break, and we'll talk about Israel for a few minutes, and then we'll do a lightning round. Back after this. Okay, we're back. Now, I had been voting for our third topic about that, you know, the attack on the Draw Muhammad thing in Texas. But Yvonne said, no, I want to talk about Israel. So tell us about what's been going on in Israel, Yvonne. Because we had this election like a month ago or something, and Bibi won.
Well, I was going back to, okay, Bibi called this election, all right, because he thought months back, okay, that he had the upper hand electorally, and that he could get a stronger coalition than the one that he had built before, which he wasn't too thrilled in terms of how he got it. Okay. Election goes around, blah, blah, blah. There was a whole bunch of noise that maybe he would lose. Election goes. He doesn't lose. Okay. He still has a plurality. He doesn't have a majority. I mean, in order to build a coalition, he needed 61 seats total out of 120. All right. Well, look, I mean, he had more seats before. Apparently, he wound up at the last minute before his time expired to build a coalition. Okay, he did manage to put together a coalition with 61 votes. And, I mean, 61 people.
And by the
right
way, this is
on
in part,
the dot.
This is in part because one of the parties that he expected to get a coalition with pulled out last week.
Yes, they did. And the thing is that the demands that all these, you know, kept talking about all the different demands that Bibi, you know, and all the different things that Bibi had been talking about to do in terms of policy. He talked about the Palestinian state, the West Bank expanding the settlements, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this shit, he has been going back and forth like crazy, because every one of these parties had substantially different demands from like what, the problem is, well, depending on what day Bibi said, I mean, some days he was for, some days he's against, you wouldn't fucking know. So, And so they had made quite a lot of demands on him in order to be in the coalition, but the reality is, and with good reason, many of those parties didn't really believe a damn word he said. And why the hell would you? I mean, if I'm honest, I mean, would you believe? Very well, how much would you believe? Really? Ah, this is Bibi's position. He's not moving from it.
Well, like I said, in terms of the U.S. elections, don't believe anything a politician says once they know they're actually running for office.
I think, well, but, you know, we were talking about earlier about, you know, some of the positions and things like that some parties have. I mean, on some of these are pretty, you know, I mean, these are not like nuanced positions. Well, I'm for more immigration, a little less immigration, so forth and so on. No. I mean, we're talking about, I mean, shit, like the Palestinian state. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. I'm like, really? Which one is it? Okay. I think it's no, but whatever it suits him, he'll say yes. So, I don't know. Look, I think the whole point that I was saying about this this whole thing is, okay, you wind up calling an election early because you thought you're going to get a bigger mandate. You wind up almost losing the election, okay? You pull it out, and then you build a coalition, and then when you finish the coalition, you wind up with, what, 61? You wind up with a far worse coalition than you had before. Well,
and the key is this one-vote margin. It means on any particular thing he wants to do, in order to make it happen, he has to have every single one of those 61 people in line.
Absolutely.
Or potentially get people from one of the opposition parties to join him. But what that means is that he's constantly right on the edge of losing his majority, having a no-confidence vote, and being forced into another election.
Yes!
He's also in a position where every one of those 61 people has a lot of individual leverage over him, where, you know, he wants something done, they can put their feet up on the desk and say, okay, you want this? Here's what you got to give me.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's just really...
What's tricky is, of course, those 61 people are all over the place on a bunch of different issues that are important. In order to get the last party in to get his coalition, he had to promise one relatively extreme party a bunch of positions in the cabinet, including foreign minister. And so that's, you know, that's going to end up pissing off the Americans and other people when they start doing crazy things. So you're constantly going to have this, you know, right on the edge, Netanyahu forced to do things he doesn't really want to do, which
it's actually going to be all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, I really don't understand, given how small this is, how long this government can stand.
Well, and I've seen a lot of predictions on that, including a couple articles from the Israeli press basically saying that, look, this is very precarious. It's not going to last very long. Something is going to give sooner rather than later. And, you know, these guys might be wrong. Maybe this lasts for 4 years. But it's also, nobody should be surprised at all if 3 months from now we're having another election in Israel.
I mean, I just don't see how it lasts that long. I mean, because exactly what you said, because every time, like, for example, he had to give in so much to such a little party to get shit. The first time that he needs to get something big, something to really pass, okay, he's going to have to wind up going and giving up so much to some fucking little bit that somebody's going to the hell with this.
Well, and the thing is, he's going to give the thing to the little party who wants it in order to do it. And in the process, he's going to piss off another one of the little parties he's got. And they're going to be like, well, screw this. If you're doing that, I'm out of here.
Right.
And you're done. You know, like the potentially safer route for a longer lasting coalition would have been a coalition with the other big party, the one that used to be Labor and now is called something else.
Yeah, I can't remember the name right.
You know, but he decided not to go for that, presumably because Labor was doing a hard bargain on that, and he doesn't really like them anyway. And so we got this instead, and it just it may not last long.
It may not last.
And we may get some weird stuff going on while it does last.
Well, and how, you know, the other part is because a whole bunch of those parties were like, you know, harping on the U.S.-Israeli relationship. I mean, seriously, I mean, how much impact is that going to have on that? I mean, given the precarious situation he wound up in, he was already in bad terms with the U.S. I mean, now that he formed his coalition of people, and I mean, you're going to wind up maybe naming a whack job to as Secretary of State or whatever. I mean, shit. Foreign minister. Yeah, I keep forgetting. I was trying to remember the title, and I'm like, what the hell is that going to freaking do?
Well, and you know. People have pointed out as well, this is one example of, you know, parliamentary systems have a lot of advantages, but when you get into this kind of scenario, it's not one of them, you know, because,
not really.
You know, yes, the parliament is more representative of the public at large because it represents all of these different viewpoints that are out there, but it makes it incredibly hard to actually govern and get something done because, you know, you don't have, you know, sort of a structure that puts you know, the leader in a position where they can push through their agenda. Now, you could say the same thing about how our system has been functioning in recent years. But, you know, we've got a bit of a stronger president, and, you know, the Congress being against the president doesn't mean the president goes away and we have a new election.
We don't pass many bills.
We don't pass many bills either. But, you know, earlier, I'd mentioned briefly the British elections, which, as we're recording, they're going to start actually voting in just a few hours, and are very likely to be in the same scenario. I mean, by the time people listen, you may know. From the commentary I've read, the chances of actually having a majority government in Britain are relatively slim, not impossible, but relatively slim. And we're probably going to have Britain once again trying to come up with a ruling coalition, which is, of course, what they have now. And so you may get these kind of weird dynamics in Britain as well, with deals being made between parties to assemble the majority. And so if that happens, whatever happens with the British election, we'll talk about it a little bit next week.
Yes.
But okay.
All right, then.
That's okay. It. We're going to close up this topic. We will be back. We will do a lightning round. We got a whole bunch of smaller things that are worth mentioning, maybe. So we'll be back after this. And we're back. It's time for the exciting lightning round, where we do 2-minute rounds, in theory anyway, alternating between myself and Yvonne on a list of smaller topics. And why don't you start this time, Yvonne?
Mark, feedback via Facebook Messenger.
And I'm actually ready for you. So, Mark, one of our loyal listeners, sent some feedback. And first of all, you know, he just asked, he noted that we had a little sponsored thing on our post on Facebook, and asked about that. And yes, indeed, we spent $20 last week to promote the post to see what kind of additional reach we got. We're still running the experiment. We'll find out. But he was kind of interested because he's promoting his own stuff as well and was asking, hey, Facebook, Google Plus, Twitter, what makes sense, what blah, blah, blah. And I basically said,
well, I will say Google Plus is
off the table.
Yes.
Oh, come on now. Anyway, so we're experimenting. We'll see what it does.
I say that because the other day I went into Google Plus for whatever the hell damn reason. There was, I had to log into my Google account, and I saw that shit's still there, right? And I went in there and talk about
a wasteland.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. I was just like, oh my God. Well, there you go. I haven't missed much. And I was out. Yeah.
Yeah. We got a whole bunch of additional views of our thing. So yes. If you are listening because you saw our ad on Facebook, hey, drop us a line on our Facebook page and let us know.
Like our Facebook page as well. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, like our Facebook page too. That's always appreciated. And then also, aside from that, he also mentioned that... one, he did a request. I don't know if we'll be able to do this or not. He said, when the elections heat up, maybe we can do some Curmudgeon's Corner live casts where we like listen to a debate together and comment in real time over it, sort of like the commentary track on a DVD.
We've talked about doing that before.
The logistics are kind of hard,
but we'll see if we can do something,
because that would be fun.
It would be fun. Okay.
And then,
especially if we get Hillary debating herself, that would be fantastic. Yeah. What does she do? Does she just like take two lecterns? She just goes and walks back and forth one to the other.
She could do like Clint Eastwood did with the chair at the last Republican convention.
Yes. Yes. There you go. That's a great idea. Yes.
Anyway, he also just wanted to say that he found Yvonne, he found your opinion on Carly Fiorina to be quite helpful.
Well, that's good.
And he said, you know, that was because, you know, when you work with someone, that grants you special insight.
I gotta agree that I probably got special insight on that psychotic bitch, you know. Yes. I'm sorry, I can't talk about her without really just spewing insults.
Okay, my turn. There's been this whole conspiracy theory thing going around that's actually had a number of prominent Republicans actually, I'm not going to say buy into it, but at least like say we should look into that, where a bunch of people are saying that this military exercise is actually a secret Obama plot to take over Texas.
I think they really, really, really need to go and have these guys' medications checked.
I mean, like, the governor of Texas has said things about this.
Okay, Rick Perry is an idiot.
No, Rick Perry's okay. Not the governor anymore. It's a new guy.
There's a new guy? What, yeah. What the hell? What are they, like, voting idiots one after the other?
Well, and several and a couple of other prominent Republicans, both in Congress and potential presidential candidates, have, when asked about this, said, well, you know, I don't really know about that, but we should look into it. It's like, okay, look, that's weak sauce. What? Yeah, look, yeah, I recognize that you've got a crazy base that you don't want to alienate.
Take over Texas. Wait a minute, don't we already take over Texas? Well, let's be clear about this. Texas is part of the United States already, right? So it's kind of tough.
I think what they're going at is that they think Obama is going to impose martial law in Texas to impose like liberal values in Texas.
That sounds like genius. I mean, I don't know why we didn't think of that before.
I saw at least one comment on Twitter saying that, hey, Texas, you know, you really shouldn't worry about like the rest of the country wanting to take over Texas. If you really ask, a lot of the country would just rather you leave.
No, I don't want Texas to leave. I got look. Texas has a substantial diversity in people, yes, and other, yes, things. Yes, and I honestly, I have a lot of friends in Texas, so I like the state. But this kind of stuff is just ridiculous. I mean, come on. Look, this is like the other moron. We had this guy who was talking about how Obama was going to create this super presidency and was going to become a dictatorship. And blah blah. Come on, people. Give me a fucking break.
Well, and this is the kind of thing where, you know, I look at the Republican Party and view this as the kind of thing that sort of is a measure of the dysfunction. That, like,
why don't we just, like, really talk about issues? Let's just make shit.
Not even that. Like, I would expect a serious, you know, high-level person in the Republican Party, whether it be a presidential candidate or a member of Congress or whatever, if they get a question from some random person at a town hall asking about this kind of nonsense,
right, you should say to them, guys, what are you kidding? I mean, come on, people, wake up.
Yeah, I mean, basically,
you know, that's not the issues facing our country.
Exactly, and say, look, there's a lot of things we disagree on with Obama, but Obama's not doing this. This is craziness. Right. Go back in your hole. And the fact that we've got prominent Republicans who are unwilling to call out their own base and say, you know, you're just full of it, this is ridiculous, is what shows me that there's a serious problem there. And you know, to be fair, some Republicans probably are willing to do that. But, you know, a lot of these folks just, you hear them and you know, they probably don't believe this nonsense themselves, but they're unwilling to call it out when the base starts giving this rabid craziness stuff. And so anyway, your turn.
Oh boy. How about, you put the flate gate?
I did. Cause I figured, you know, you might care. I don't, but
you put, okay. I realized that I read it earlier and I just realized, yes, I do care a little bit about it. Okay.
Go
so,
for it.
So they did this investigation now where basically, without pointing the finger to Tom Brady, but in almost as many words, it seems like Tom Brady did order the balls deflated. Now, look, I don't know. Do you know anything about what they're talking about in terms of Deflategate? Do you understand what happened?
I I know that in some, they lowered the air pressure in the balls, which makes them easier to handle in certain circumstances. And basically,
it was a very cold game. It was outdoors.
Basically, the idea is this is an attempt to cheat by changing the dynamics of the game in your favor.
Look, a ball that is like that deflated a solid ball like that is going to be easier to grip. There's no doubt about it. Okay, all right. Every quarterback, everybody that I've seen talk, got interviewed about it, has said that absolutely. I mean, I've grabbed these kind of balls. It's got to be easier to grip if it's not that inflated. There's no doubt about it. Now, I think, you know, it's just the thing of the whole thing about this. It's just, I think you talk about ethics and certain things. Look, the guy is talented enough that I think he could have won with the damn balls inflated. It didn't matter. But I'm like, why do certain people like get so pushed that they want to win? They want to win so bad, no matter how good they are, that they even like they will go and like go to these extremes in order to try to win. And go and like violate the rules. That's just something that happens a lot.
Here's the thing. I don't care at all about sports, even less about football. But the one thing that I found extremely like interesting here, I mean, they could have completed this investigation, figured it out before the Super Bowl, and potentially even, you know, stripped this team of the title or whatever and given it to the other one to go to the Super Bowl.
They could have
imposed sanctions prior to the Super Bowl, but they made a very conscious decision that said, you know, we're going to stretch out this investigation and we're not going to say anything about it until what? You know, 4 months after, 3 months
well,
after?
But I think the reason is because everybody said that despite the fact that that involved cheating, that I don't think that nobody thought that a forfeit of a game was a sanction that was expected.
Well, right? So aside from the forfeit, they could have taken certain people out of the game.
Yeah, they could have. They could have. You know, but
the point is not doing any
fair,
of that and moving
but
it
to
the
be
summer.
Fair, you know how long the report is they wrote on this?
Yeah, yeah.
243 pages. Now, I will tell you this, that given the bum rap that the NFL got for investigating certain things like recently very lightly, you said that they could have investigated that quickly. They could have, but they've gotten so much heat over everything else. I think that they said, no, you know what? Listen. We're going to investigate this thing. I mean, Jesus.
Well,
you know, but
it just reminds me of the things when there's some sort of investigation and they decide to punt it till after the election. Because if they came out with the results before the election, it might affect the election. So let's punt it till like
sports and politics are very similar in many ways. So, you know, it's not surprising. So anyway. All right. Well, all right. Enough on the balls.
My turn. Garland, Texas, there was an event by groups that are sort of widely recognized as anti-Muslim groups doing, you know, draw Muhammad kind of contests. Some guy came in, tried to shoot it up, wasn't very successful. They got killed rapidly. No innocents got killed in this, and it's brought up all of the sort of free speech issues again. And I just wanted to say on this, you know, look, while the people that were putting this on, I'm all for draw all the damn pictures of Muhammad you want. I think it's ridiculous that you should be stopped by the fact that certain people find that offensive and might want to do violence over it. However, these guys were doing it in an antagonistic way. They specifically wanted, they intended to offend people, but too damn bad. Like, I think the people putting on this event were pretty awful people. However, it doesn't. They still have the right to do it, and they absolutely, positively should be able to do that. They should be able to do that in a feeling of safety. Nobody should be attacking them. And there've been a number of people out there saying, well, you know, yes, it was wrong for the people to try to go in there with their guns, but you know, these guys should have known better. They shouldn't have been provocative. And no. Fundamentally, it is. We have to absolutely and universally defend the right for people to say and do unpopular things.
No, but here's the thing. Okay, all right, look. It's like, look, if I went, I live in a very big Jewish community. If I went outside and I started freaking protesting massively, saying Israel sucks, fuck you Jews, blah, 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 it may be my right. Okay, but you know what? The fact that after a week of doing that, I may get the shit kicked out of me, okay, or worse, okay, is my fault. I mean, you are entitled to that free speech, but just because you're entitled to that free speech, that doesn't mean that you're not going to elicit a reaction.
Well, no, okay, look, from people that hate it. But I want to be clear here. Yes, you'd be stupid not to anticipate that you might have some sort of reaction. However, if somebody did beat the shit out of you, they're still in the wrong, not you.
I know that they're still in the wrong. I get that, but it's still, you know, look.
You should be able to expect to be able to walk down the street and say the most offensive thing you can possibly imagine. And I know realistically, you're absolutely right. Someone may beat the shit out of you. Someone may even shoot you. However, that we need to strive against that. We need to strive for the expectation that you should be as offensive as you possibly could be, and you would be perfectly safe.
The fact that it's your right, and the fact that the law would defend you, and whatever, you know what? It may not mean much afterwards if you got shot dead by some psycho, okay, who was against you, okay? Yes, they'll throw him in jail. Yes, they'll do that. Yes, so what?
Right,
but the thing is,
my point is, we need to strive for the kind of a society where you could be just that offensive, and people would walk away.
I would love to be
there,
but unfortunately, we're not anywhere close to that yet. It's just
okay. Your turn, and we do two more.
The Sandberg death.
Go for it.
Sheryl Sandberg's husband. Guys, what the heck? Sheryl Sandberg's a COO at Facebook. So her husband is a CEO of SurveyMonkey. Okay. Apparently, there's been a lot of outpouring about this, especially because it was CEO of Facebook. So there's been a lot of postings on there. The guy was on vacation in Mexico with his family. Apparently. He fell off the treadmill, hit himself on the head, and wind up getting himself killed by exercising.
I hadn't actually seen the final result of what it was, but
did you have dinner?
Alex, I have not had dinner yet. After I'm done. We're almost done.
Do you know what dinner was?
No, what's dinner?
Steak and potato.
Steak and potato?
Yeah.
Sounds okay. Good. And can I get some?
I had it on a little table, and Mommy gave me salt, and I put it salt on a potato.
Hey, can I get some of that steak?
Okay, let me finish here. So, anyway, so...
You're not in the house.
Basically, tragic accident.
You can save some for me.
Yeah, save some for Yvonne, Alex. Okay, so...
I already finished the potato.
Okay.
Oh, crap. Okay. All right, well. All right.
Anyway, tragic accident. I guess they happen, but...
On a treadmill. He got killed on a freaking treadmill exercising. I mean, for real. Shit, is nothing safe anymore?
No, nothing is. I mean, you know, what all the time when we talk about these terrorism things, one of the comparisons that people make all the time is more Americans die tripping in the bathtub, you know, than do by terrorism.
I get that, but I haven't heard. I'm sorry. It's the first time I ever heard of some guy being on a fucking treadmill, falling off of it, getting killed.
You know, I would be that guy.
Yes, so I'm going to discourage you exercising, I guess, since that might improve your longevity. No, it's not on a treadmill, at least. Use an elliptical machine. There you go.
I'm sure I could injure myself badly on one of those as well.
Oh, boy. Well, anyway.
Okay, one last thing, and I know we went over a little bit because Alex interrupted here, but I did just want to mention Baltimore. We talked about Baltimore last week. The development this week was that we actually had 6 police officers arrested for a range of charges up to and including murder.
Yes.
Over this case, because when they did the investigation, all kinds of irregularities there from, you know, they didn't think there was actual justification for arresting this guy in the first place, to how he was treated, to not responding when he needed medical attention, to delaying and not going directly to where they were going to take him, all kinds of things. And, you know, that's the development there. I mean, I talked last week about how, you know, cities needed to get their act together in terms of reacting quickly and strongly to these kinds of things. Baltimore didn't quite get the quickly part, but once they did react, they did react strongly.
Forcefully. Yes, yeah. They did.
And any additional thoughts on Baltimore? Things have calmed down a bit there.
No, I mean, I think that, I mean, I'm really glad that they took quick and forceful action based on the preliminary investigation they did. They didn't back off. So I think that it's, as we've been saying, I mean, I hope that all this attention that this is getting proves to be a net positive in the end.
Now, okay. Of course, we still noted some things like it turns out all six are out on bail. And the amounts of bail were in some cases less than the bail being asked for by some of the protesters who got arrested during the protesting this week or last week on this. So there's still weirdness here. And
But the charges are very serious and they're police officers. So I guess they sometimes. Look, they're facing substantial jail time. I mean, of these charges.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
Come on, give me a break. I mean, you know, yeah. Just because the bail was low is not really, you know, they don't have an easy road.
People are just pointing out the disparity, and they also pointed out the disparity when Baltimore had a curfew. There were a number of tests where, you know, white and black people would coordinate together on Facebook and go out and break the curfew in exactly the same way, doing the exact same activities, and the black people would get harassed and arrested for it, and the white people would be left alone or asked if they needed a ride home, you know? And so, yeah, there's still issues there.
Wasn't built in a day.
Yeah, and of course we still have to see what ends up happening in these trials, and it'll be a long time, and we'll see. Do they end up getting off in the end? And you know, there may be more evidence that comes out. Maybe some of them should go. Maybe like out of these six, maybe two of them are really responsible, and a couple others should get off. I don't know, but we'll see. Anyway, that is the end of our lightning round, and that is the end of our show today. Thanks everybody for joining us on yet another Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, if you have any comments, thoughts, etc., hey, go to our Facebook page. We're Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook. Comment there on our on the post for this episode. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll have a little conversation with you there about whatever it is you want to talk about that went on the show. Or if you don't like Facebook, you can reach Yvonne and I on Twitter. I'm at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne is at I-M-B-O, I-M-B-O-U. We'd love to hear from you on those ways as well. And if you really don't like any of those social media things, you can email me personally as well. I'm Abulsme at Abulsme.com, and I'll relay the comments around to Mr. Bo. But we appreciate your listenership. Like us on Facebook. Like the post on Facebook. Share us with your friends. Review us on iTunes. All of the wonderful things. Let everybody know if you enjoyed the show. If you didn't enjoy the show, well, you know, you don't have to tell everybody that.
Right.
In any case, have a great week, everybody. And we'll talk to you again next week on another Curmudgeon's Corner. Goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.